You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin. Brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06. Nice to have you along on this Friday morning, April 11th. And one more hour of our week here visiting family in Idaho. I got to tell you, watching a nearly full moon over the past hour here, I'm looking due west and watching it start to set over the Sawtooth Range here west of Idaho Falls is it's second to none. I tell you, I love Wisconsin, but boy, that's a sight I will never get tired of. Coming up, we've got guests in all four segments of this hour today. Corrine Hendrickson's coming up to talk a bit about childcare and a new survey of providers from around the state. We will have our week in review panel coming up with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze. We'll talk about the ways that Donald Trump has been weaponizing the Department of Justice in ways never seen before to go after political opponents, the political opponents who aren't committing crimes, unlike what some folks accused the Biden administration of doing. We will talk about Ben Wickler stepping down as head of the state Democratic Party and where the party goes from here. Dan Schumacher will wrap things up talking about sports, and then I'm off to the airport to get back to God's country, as I guess I have to call it. But then I have to walk off stage like What's-His-Face did on Saturday Night Live. But first, before all of that, we've got to get to the weekend forecast details. And for that, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here to tell us more. Brittany, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing so far on this Friday?
Good here. Obviously, I'm still managing to whine about the cool weather back home in Wisconsin.
Oh, don't worry, even Pat, though I'm not there. We're all whining.
Yep.
But it's, you know, been quiet and slowly getting warmer. So tell us what we're expecting for the weekend.
Yeah. So first thing we have to do is get through the thick fog first. We've got dense fog advisories from about Baraboo, Wisconsin Rapids, north through Eau Claire into Hayward. Visibility near zero in some of those spots. So take it easy this morning. That will all clear on out of here by 9 to 10 o'clock this morning, and then you'll see the sunshine. There's a lot of it out there. Beautiful, bright blue skies expected today and warmer temperatures, making it to those mid-50s all across the state. Everybody. Except for if you're right up against a lake, then you're not going to get that warm. I'm sorry. You're going to be into those upper 40s along Lake Michigan and Lake Superior. But the rest of us feeling some spring temperatures. We've got another bright start to the day tomorrow. We will see clouds increasing, though. So wake up and enjoy it early. We will hit the low to mid 60s. So finally feeling some spring warmth. It'll be breezy, though, by the evening. And then as we go into Sunday, a system does swipe, especially up north. We are looking at mostly cloudy skies up north. Highs on Sunday only in the upper 40s for them, with scattered showers and maybe a thunderstorm rolling through. Well, down south on Sunday, you'll see partly cloudy skies and highs in those low 60s. Now, Monday, that rain rolls through the entire state, and it could flip to some snow on the back end, especially north, Monday night and into Tuesday.
I'm just pausing for effect. That she's saying snow still at this part of April. Greg has more of an audio pause for silent effect here to express our displeasure, but it's not at you. It's not at you. It's just, wait, I've got somebody in the comment section saying it. Alicia says, this is Wisconsin. Real spring is a myth. Okay.
She's right.
It's all part of the deep space trying to get me to believe in weather.
Oh, no.
It's What the guy say to me, it's climate manipulation. I'm like, all right, that's great,
man. That's what I was looking for. I'm like, wait, what was that phrase? Yeah, climate manipulation.
This weather gets me down. Literally, he goes, this weather gets me down, man. But it's not climate change. People say that. It's climate manipulation. I'm like, great.
Let's embrace it. Let's embrace it. Let's go for it. Starting Monday, welcome to – we're not going to call it the weather anymore. Starting Monday, welcome to climate manipulation with Brittany Merlot.
Perfect, because it'll be snowing, right?
Let's see how long it'll be before somebody takes that seriously and go, they're actually confessing to it now. It's climate manipulation.
Sponsored by Jewish Space Lasers. Jewish Space Lasers, when you want to get space lasering done.
No, that now Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be mad at us, and it's going to be a thing.
She's Brittany, always mad.
I know. Have a great weekend, Brittany. We'll talk to you later.
You too.
A reminder, you can always sign up for our daily newsletter. Head to upnorthnewswi.com. And you will get our Sunday morning newsletter that we've started a couple of weeks back, dedicated to the week in Wisconsin politics. We will, of course, have articles in there about Ben Wickler stepping down as state Democratic Party chair, Derek Van Orden's angry denials that he was going to vote for anything that would cut benefits, and then yesterday voted to cut a massive amount from the budget, which is going to impact benefits, and so much more. So again, sign up at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Let's bring in now Corrine Hendrickson, who you're like, wait, wasn't she just on Wednesday? Yeah, but she also teased something on Wednesday that there was about to be released a new statewide report on child care providers to tell us kind of the state of the industry. So welcome back. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you. I'm actually at a conference this weekend. So
yeah, I know. So you actually get a break from the kiddos here, but you know, to obviously talk about some important topics. And it was actually through Governor Evers' office, along with the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families, that announced what they called the DCF's Child Care Counts Stabilization Survey. And you kind of gave us a preview of coming attractions, but now you've actually seen the numbers. So if I tell you the governor's top line on this said a quarter of providers across the state are somewhat, very, or extremely likely to close their doors if the legislature fails to make critical investments to the Child Care Counts program, I'm going to guess that on the surprise meter, that's a zero for you. You're not the least bit surprised at this.
Exactly. So, yeah. So this also part of that, though, is people are going to think that we're going to close immediately the next day. And that's not going to necessarily happen. Several will close right away. We're actually hearing several are closing in May already because they still can't make it work, even with some investment. And knowing that this is coming, they're just not able to. They're out of the fight. And I completely understand. It's heartbreaking and awful. It's going to hurt these families and these children and the providers and the educators that have poured their heart and souls into this career. And they're going to leave. But the thing is, those that are doing the educating are going to now probably double their salary and get benefits somewhere else. And that is the crux of the issue. So what's going to happen is we need to increase our rates to offset that loss of funding, because it is 1% is our average profit margin. It's not that we have all this extra money sitting around. It's expensive to run a childcare program that's high quality, because you have to have that one-on-one low ratio teacher-child relationship so that the children can actually learn from the teacher and the other people and the other children, the environment, et cetera. And we only pay $13.66 an hour. It's up $3 an hour only because of all that federal funding that came through. So if we're going to replace that with tuition, we've done the math, and it's about $10 to $15 a week per child that we have to increase. So parents are already paying half of their income on childcare. You're looking at adding another $30 to $45 a week on top of that, just to keep the wages at $13 an hour, which is impossible to recruit and retain. And myself, as a family childcare, our average is $7.50 an hour. And we work 50 hours one-on-one with these kids and an additional 10 to 20 extra on cleaning and cooking and, you know, all the things that go into running a business.
The survey, though, you mentioned that it offers up some validity for what you've been saying all along. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so the survey actually did ask us to do two parts. Those of us who had already been in business 2 years ago, before the last round of the budget, when the state legislative body, Joint Finance Committee, decided they did not want to fund childcare with any sort of state funds, then we all said, well, our rates are going to go up. We're going to start closing. All these things are going to happen. And so the survey actually has that in there. So we asked, had to answer the questions like, what did you do? What happened to your tuition? What happened to this? And it showed that what we said was going to happen. And so this time, there's no way that reasonable way that the legislators could say, well, they're just being hysterical. They're just, you know, exaggerating what's going to happen because they want that handout. No, we're being honest and we're telling you this is the consequence for your inaction because we can't keep going. It's unsustainable at this rate. And you've already shown that you know that we're important. You already shown that you know that we need to be around. You told us to make that the rescue plan funds. Do this as a pilot because DCF has actually asked for it now 3 times in the state budget to put funding in to help increase wages. And they said no. And they said, use it as a pilot. Prove it works. They did. We did. It worked. And they still said no. And Governor Evers saved them because he was able to claw back funds from other departments that were not used and keep it going for another year. No one's coming to save them this time. This is 100% on the legislative body if they choose not to provide state funding because they know what the consequences are going to be. We're telling them every day.
Yeah. So again, this, you know, it's no longer just thoughts and feelings. It's actual hard data that you see being provided. And there are still a couple of more opportunities to talk to the Joint Finance Committee and say to these legislators, 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats, that there are ways that they can help.
Oh, absolutely. And other states are stepping up. And we're the last state to fall off the cliff because we did find that Governor Evers was able to claw back money and keep it going for another year. Other states fell off the cliff last year, kind of throughout the year or even before that. And their states are investing. Louisiana even put $50 million in their state budget. There's about 20 states that have put state dollars in the state budget and don't rely solely on the federal tax dollars that are coming into the state.
And again, if you want to provide some of that input to your legislator, you can email the Joint Finance Committee through this address, budget.comments@legis.wisconsin.gov. Legis is LEGIS for legislature. One more time, budget.comments@legis.wisconsin.gov. Corinne, we appreciate hearing a bit more about the survey itself, the hard data on this, and we're going to want to touch base after the Joint Finance Committee hearings are done and see what Republicans actually propose for language in the budget and get your reaction to it. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Enjoy the conference. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you again soon. Let's see. I didn't even get to sports last hour. We've had such a busy morning here so far. And that is because maybe in part because the Milwaukee Brewers lost to Colorado 7-2. Why did they lose? Well, they went 1-for-13 with runners in scoring position. Bryce Terang ended his 12-game hitting streak. Although Jackson Churio extended his hitting streak to 12 games, the Brewers are now starting a 3-game series in Arizona, and that will get started tonight at 8:05 coverage on several civic media stations for that series in Arizona. The Bucks beat New Orleans 136-111. Our Week in Review panel after this, you're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I like Ben Wickler. I consider him a friend, but so apologies if I'm making him wince right now. But what else are you going to do if you're going to lead a segment talking about Ben Wickler? Then go with Michael Jackson. I mean, I don't have the theme to Gentle Ben here, or I maybe would play that. Anyway, welcome back to our Week in Review panel. At 22 past the hour, Jennifer Schulze is here. Mark Jacob and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Good morning, all of you. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I caught Jennifer doom scrolling there during the break and asked her what it was. And it doesn't matter. It's all doom anyway. But right. We'll get to some of the headlines, especially nationally, as we often do. We've got a lot to talk about with President Trump and criminal behavior and weaponizing the Department of Justice. But even though, Mark and Jennifer, you're Chicago-based and you cover a lot of national stories. You certainly understand, you know, the importance of Wisconsin and the impact of Ben Wickler as a state Democratic Party chair. From a national standpoint, Jennifer, is it fair to say mission accomplished for, you know, for what he could do and what a party chair is capable of doing?
Oh my God. Yeah. Above and beyond mission accomplished. I mean, set a whole new standard for what a party chair can do. And he's a model now for other party chairs. And I know an inspiration and quite a resource for many, many of the other Democratic Party chairs in the country. Yeah. Boy, he's something.
I would say as well, Mark, that state party chair is one of those positions we just don't ever seem to talk about. But in part because of the work that Ben's done these past 6 years, we actually are more aware of party chairs than we used to be. I'd say if you quizzed people, maybe the only other time they followed a party chair was that time when Howard Dean was running the DNC.
Yeah. No, people don't pay attention to it. But Wickler really was high profile and needed to be. You know, you guys have been really fighting hard. It's been so much difficulty there, you know, and here down here in Illinois, you know, I've been paying attention to how the Uline family has stuck a lot of money to, you know, for pro-Trump people. And I feel like that's why Mandela Barnes may have lost, because the money from Uline. So there's all this money coming in that Wickler has had to fight against, Elon Musk's money, all kinds of stuff. And that's why it's been such a really impressive fight by him.
Yeah. Mark, while I got you, I want to continue with you and get to your column this week. And I don't have it right in front of me, but it was something like 20 rude questions the media should be asking.
Yeah.
And can you talk more about that? I mean, rude is just another word of saying direct. Just ask some direct questions.
Yeah. I had rude in quotes. Yeah. So what happens with the media, you know, covering big newsmakers is, so they'll ask questions, but then they never get answers and they forget about it all. It'll just, you know, rolls down the river, never to be heard from again. And politicians know that. And so they know if they can stave off the questions for a day or two, they'll never hear about it again. And so I wanted to raise, you know, some things that people may have forgotten, such as Pete Hegseth has promised to not drink as defense secretary. Is that the case? Is he not drinking? I just wonder. I guess it's a rude question, but I just wonder. And I'd love to hear Donald Trump talk more about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. What did he really like about the sex predator? I mean, did he think that the sex predator was a clever conversationalist or what? I'd like to know that. I'd like to know Melania Trump was supposed to hold a press conference in the summer of 2016 to explain her whole immigration status. Trump said it was going to happen in the next 2 weeks. That was 2016. Never happened. And, you know, and a lot of people, I think, if you brought it up today, would think, oh, that's not fair game. Well, that sure is a fair game, because he probably pulled strings to get her into the country on an Einstein visa, as they call it, when she shouldn't have been. You know, in fact, she probably worked illegally before she got the visa. So anyway, so there's lots like that.
Yeah. And so you can get that stopthepresses.news. And Jennifer, of course, has her Indistinct Chatter newsletter on Substack, although we hear Ben Wickler is starting a Substack too, Jennifer. So we're all getting one now. Everybody's competing with us.
Come on in. The water's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Jim Santella, did you start a Substack yet? Or are you happy enough just having a 2-hour Saturday morning talk show statewide?
That is enough for me. And of course, and on that broadcast and this one as well, had additional questions. Here's another one for Mark and all the rest of us. Remember when Donald Trump promised he was going to release all of his tax returns? The IRS is awfully slow in completing that audit, are they not? Where is that? Right?
slowest audit ever. But, you know, I come back to Richard Nixon and trying to weaponize government for his own personal political ambitions. And we, you know, weaponizing the Department of Justice, weaponizing the Internal Revenue Service. And so you bring up the IRS, Jim, and I mean, for Nixon was amateur hour compared to what Trump is doing. And I don't mean that as a compliment. I mean, for Nixon, even thinking he could use DOJ this way was enough to get him impeached. And 50 years later, it doesn't seem like any kind of a big deal.
Right. Absolutely. He was more than dipping his toe into all kinds of things, including impoundment problems, all variety of things. But again, we acknowledge and we embrace the fact that, you know what, the rule of law worked and the system worked and he was about to be thrown out of office. And he did, in fact, abide by the directives of a federal district court judge to turn over those tapes that were his unfounding in the end. Here we've got a president that just, again, in the last 24 hours or so, has identified two people for the first time, among others likely to come, and referred them basically, one of them expressly, the other to the Department of Homeland Security, but one of them to the Department of Justice to open an investigation, a criminal investigation, to see whether or not this particular person, again, his name is Christopher Krebs, he was one who had the audacity to suggest that the 2020 election was in fact not stolen, was not the product of voting machines being compromised. And today there is a referral of him to Pam Bondi to open any criminal investigation to determine whether or not he's violated the law. That kind of thing, hugely problematic for two reasons. One is it completely runs roughshod. He vaults over any separation of the Department of Justice from the executive branch, which has always been the tradition. And second, and here's the real specter, if these two who are on Donald Trump's list, plainly, from back in the first term are on at the start of this, more is to come, including journalists, academics, people in business, all across the board. I'll give him the name. Here is Pat Kreitlow. Open the investigation. And again, as we know, the investigation is punishment.
Let me turn that around then on Donald Trump when we come back from this break. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with our Week in Review panel in just a bit. Okay, I did find another song that mentions a Ben. I admit it. But the thing is, this one's coincidental, because what I was originally looking for was what was number one on the charts this week in 1974 when we were at the height of Watergate and Nixon abusing power. How was I to know it was going to be Benny and the Jets by Elton John? So welcome back to Up North News Radio. Our Week in Review panel is here. Journalist Jennifer Schulze, Mark Schultz, or Jennifer Schulze, Mark Jacob, Jim Santel. Holy cow, it's Friday. Get me on an airplane. Guys, welcome back. Let's pick up, Mark. We were talking about the way that the President of the United States is now directing that what could be criminal investigations are launched against people, not for committing any crime, but to look for a crime because he doesn't like what they did.
Right.
And so we've talked about him doing that with Chris Krebs, you know, who was this top advisor who made clear that the 2020 election was one of the most secure ever. Now he's Trump is telling the Justice Department to look at his actions. And here's the New York Times headline. Trump escalates use of official power to intimidate and punish his perceived foes. A presidential decree instructing the Justice Department to scrutinize whether a former official broke the law crosses a new line. It crosses a new line? Yeah. I mean, you could do the same headline could say, Trump shoots somebody on Fifth Avenue. Has he finally crossed a line?
Yeah, they're just afraid to they walk right up to the, you know, to what they should say, and then they step carefully away. I mean, there's no reason they can't say abuse of power. It's an abuse of power. Mm-hmm. You know, that headline is actually better than a sentence in a New York Times story a few days ago in which they wouldn't use the term dictatorship or anything. They're writing about Trump's retribution, you know, but about his abuses of power and how he's just. He really is. He's moving more and more toward dictatorship. He just is. And the New York Times described it as a maximalist view of his power. Trump has a maximalist view of his power. In other words, you know, so did Stalin, so did Hitler, so did Mao. I mean, come on, their inability to say what's right in front of us is. It's just frustrating.
So here's where I get to turn it around now. And I'll start with the former U.S. attorney here. And granted, this isn't going to happen right now. Republicans control Congress. But if the midterms don't go well for Trump and Democrats take back the House and the Senate, and let's say they have a particularly good year and they come close to, or reach 60 votes in the Senate. James, we've been hearing ever since Trump came on the scene that a sitting president and sometimes a former president, you know, cannot be tried for criminal activity. It's basically what Richard Nixon said. Well, if the president does it, it's not a crime. Can we finally give that up now? And if a president of the United States is committing crimes, that somehow it can be found, you know, in 2027 with a Democratic Congress, a way to say even a president cannot commit crimes while in office?
And the abundant problem with that is also inherent in what the four of us are talking about this morning, is that that concept on July 1 comes from, yes, indeed, our United States Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, who said at that time that the president not only has to be muscular and strong and vital and active, all the horrific things that are not in the Constitution, but also it is now the law of the land that any president has these immunities. Now, there's no reason for complete despair because, of course, we had a former president who had that immunity but did not exercise it to commit crimes here. So what should an active Congress do come 2027? Begin to pass, and we see the introduction of some of this, all kinds of legislation which can indeed not just clip the wings of a president, but also say it is illegal for the president to do these kinds of things, including if you want to include on the a broad list of things, reverse what the Congress has done in terms of funding overseas, domestically, cannot expose our agencies to people who do not have security clearances and let the Social Security information and other things out there. All those kinds of things, Congress can pass laws to prohibit within their purview the capacity, the balance, the check and balance between the Congress and the president to prohibit him from doing many of these things without having to rescind completely what John Roberts wrote back in July.
And I know when that will happen. It will happen when there's a Republican Congress and a Democratic president about to take office. If we can't count on the New York Times because they give us lines like Mr. Trump has chipped away at the norms. Well, Jennifer, if it's not going to be, you know, the New York Times or the national media, how about at the local level? Your latest on Substack talks about, you know, local media holding the president to account.
Well, as we've talked about before, local news has a different remit, I think, than national news. Their job, I think, is to reflect what's happening to their communities. And they do a really good job of it. I know local news, newspapers and TV and radio have all suffered a lot in the last 20 plus years, and newsrooms are shrinking and whatever. But when there's a big story, and this week it's been the tariffs impacts, a lot of them really are stepping up. There in Wisconsin, you guys have a really, I think, impressive news outlet, the Wisconsin Examiner. They did a piece late last week about how your trade delegation was in Europe as all of this was happening and figuring out how to help manufacturers in Wisconsin who are really worried about how they're going to get the parts for the machines that are made in Wisconsin. Across the country, local news, that's what they do. When people are reacting to big national stories, they go and actually put a face on it. And I think it's always important to talk about that, because otherwise I think we forget about the role that they play when we're and I know I am super focused on what the New York Times and the big journalism does, but local journalism is doing something different, and I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and Wisconsin Examiner, part of State's Newsroom, which is different than Courier Newsroom, but again, they too doing just incredible work, especially in the investigative area. Mm-hmm. Ruth Conniff just has an incredible team going on there. Mark, we talked about your latest column on 20 Rude Questions. The latest in your video series is about the big law firms and universities that, much like some of the national media, are just rolling over. And this just cannot be a good precedent. Nothing good can come of this with what these law firms and universities are doing.
No, and this video series called On Target, I do with Stephen Beschloss, you know, we found ourselves actually praising a New York Times editorial, which is not something we do very often. But this one was really on target. And it said that these law firms and universities do not have to roll over to this intimidation, that they can fight it, that the law firms who have fought it are doing okay in court. I mean, they may very well win because this is, it just seems patently illegal. And universities need to be solid about it. The president of Princeton is actually being really brave and leading the charge to fight back. These other universities, Columbia University is pretty much seems willing to just hand over the university to Trump. And that is such an alarming thing. We all ought to be really scared about that.
Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, I want to ask you about another legal matter, and that it deals with the essentially the disappearing of people off our streets and the Trump administration saying, well, once we get them out of the country, if they're in a gulag in El Salvador someplace, I mean, there's nothing we can really do about it. There was this 9-0 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court late yesterday about this Maryland father scooped up. He's still in this, you know, notorious prison, having been charged with nothing, having been falsely accused of things. And yet, even with a 9-0 ruling, it sounds like there's still some legal wiggle room for the Trump administration to not be forced to get this guy back, or who should have been brought back within like 24 hours, not 24 days.
Absolutely. Even when the Supreme Court earlier this week said, we're going to take a look at this, the reactions of most of us rational people was, why? The Fourth Circuit has already said, describe this as a government kidnapping, a government kidnapping. The answer should have been right now, by the end of the day today, you get those planes down there, you get this United States citizen back here and restore his presence with his family. That's what the Chief Justice should have done. Instead, what we did is we waited a couple of days, issued this very circuitous and curious order in which they seemed to say, okay, we're going to send this back to the lower court judge who has also said this is outrageous, but she's got to interpret her words a little bit more clearly because she may have overcome and overridden some of the other obligations in the diplomacy sphere. What are you talking about, John Roberts? This is a United States citizen who is improperly, the government acknowledges this, by the way, the attorney who did so in court, now suspended by our deputy attorney general. We acknowledge that he's improperly there. Get him back here right now. There's inscribed in the front of the Supreme Court building says, justice for all, but apparently not for Mr. Abrego Garcia, who still today, after a month, is presumably still in that high security, brutal prison in El Salvador. The United States Supreme Court, at the head of which is John Roberts, should have been clear and simply said, get him back here. The Fourth Circuit's opinion, the lower court judge's opinion, was clear. And if you don't do it, you're in contempt. Interesting to see what Pam Bondi will do today and this weekend about whether or not they will obstruct even this order based upon this curious, wiggly language that John Roberts has given.
And I fear it takes us, Jennifer, that much closer to the day, and it will be a landmark day in this country's history when the U.S. Supreme Court is not, vague about something and clearly orders something, and Trump steps up to a bank of microphones and says to the Supreme Court, you and what army? And if I had to put money down, I'd say those words are going to be uttered from his lips at some point. And then will media say we're in a constitutional crisis?
I agree with you, Pat. I think we are, days, weeks. No, we're not that far from it. Trump's given every indication that, he thinks he is above everything. I mean, just look at how he's dealt with the stuff with the markets and tariffs this week. Just there's no accountability, and we have a long road to walk with this guy. I think it's only going to get worse.
Mark, what is, when Jennifer mentions the markets, I have to ask you this. Do you have a confidence level that at some point we may learn about some of the insider trading that's been done over the past week or two. I mean, Trump has spoken in, you know, terminology like, oh, people got very rich because of me and my dealings in the market. And, you know, I've said a couple of times now in the past couple of days, I don't want to hear from Hakeem Jeffries about this. I don't want to hear from Chuck Schumer. I want Martha Stewart to step up to a bank of microphones and say, are you kidding me? I've still got hope out there that there's going to be a signal chat someplace where they're talking about what to sell and buy.
Yeah, but it would take that because, I mean, it was just shocking. I mean, he's in the Oval Office joking about how many millions his friends made off of these stock trades. And his creation of this volatility is a giant opportunity for anyone with insider information to make a ton and, you know, for his pals too. So do I have any confidence that anyone would find out about that? Or, I mean, I feel like that kind of financial misconduct is exactly what Trump is allowing by eroding all the oversight, you know. And I mean, in so many ways, Trump has taken away any of the guardrails, any of the oversight for financial crimes like this.
I'm not laughing at that. I think the
bandits will get away with it. Is what I'm saying.
I'm not laughing at it. I'm laughing at as I was looking at the New York Times politics section, the new top story on there. Here's the headline: President's talk of a third term defies Constitution and tests democracy.
Okay.
How much do they own a furniture store for how much they can couch their language and everything? This just, it blows me away. And I love that I have this therapy session with you guys every week. Mark Jacob, Jennifer Schulze, and Jim Santel. Jim's show is tomorrow morning at 9 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Gang, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dan Schumacher, do a little bit of sports to wrap things up here from the great Mountain West before getting back to Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now, today, we mentioned that today is National A-Track Day. And Michael from Tosa puts on the text line, no, A-Track should not have its own day. I hate it with the heat of 1,000 suns.
Really?
And you know what you're playing? What you're playing here? What you're playing here, Greg? Sounds like it's from the A-Track era.
Yeah. Dan, what are we playing right now?
Estimated Profit.
Yep. And for I like the way you described it too with the like if this was an A-Track, you'd be like, all right, this is a great song.
Chunk. And then up it comes again.
You know, it's funny, I was watching MSNBC and they were talking, they were playing Grateful Dead music in the background, mm-hmm. and they were using Estimated Profit and making fun of Trump at the same time.
That's exactly what I did, baby. I'm a scam. So,
that Ari Flesh or Ari Flesh.
Yeah.
Dark haired complexion.
Oh, Ari Berman. Yeah. Yep.
Co-host, or he's the host. He had another guest on, and they both were going to
Ari Melbourne.
Las Vegas.
Melbourne, thank you.
Wrong,
they were
Ari.
Both going to the, they were going to the Sphere next week to see the
Oh, okay.
Is that? Are you going to do that with after
comparing the economy to Estimated Profit, led by Trump?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I mean, now what year was that song roughly? Because again, we've been talking about Nixon and Watergate, and you know they were of that era when they wrote some of their
77.
Songs.
77. Yeah. 77.
It does have a very 70s quality to it. Let's see here. Let's looking it up for you all.
That's okay. Well, while you do that, I got to answer the other question that I first asked at 6 o'clock this morning, and that's who are the Broncos playing? That, of course, would be the Western Michigan University Broncos, and that would be Boston University, who defeated Penn State in the other national semifinal game late last night, 3-1. The Western Michigan Broncos defeated Denver University 3-2 in double overtime. They're killing me. So it's Western Michigan versus Boston U tomorrow. 5:30 Central Time on ESPN2 for the National Men's Collegiate Hockey Division I Championship. So
now it's only April, right?
It is only April, which is why we haven't said too much about your first place Chicago Cubs, but that's go ahead. I figured that's where you were going.
Yeah, it's just a game of peace already. You know?
I said this yesterday, you know, that's something that I don't see a lot of people talking about, the fact that the Cubs are first place. And I said this last year when Craig Counsell took over. I said, don't be surprised if in his second or third season, the magic starts happening. He finds his groove because he's one of the best coaches. And this is not surprising to me. So it's going to be
all season long. It's going to go back and forth, I think, all season long.
But you know, for
pitching falls apart.
But you know, and this is almost more for Brittany Merlot than for you, but I know that I've seen in Facebook posts, both stadiums for the Sox and the Cubs, not great crowds for these first couple of weeks of the baseball season here.
Well, I understand the Sox for sure. I get that. I don't understand the Cubs. I don't understand the Cubs because they.
The Cubs one, I didn't know if it was weather or if that was just somebody, you know, took the photo like pregame, you know, or something like that. Because, I mean, Wrigley still sells out all the time, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it does. It's still a hard ticket.
So it's just a matter of whether they get the ticket, whether they show up or not. So, all right. So we've covered collegiate hockey here. I suppose there are other things going on. You mentioned the Cubs, the Brewers lost one in Colorado, but again, they take 2 out of 3. That's the first series they've taken in Colorado since 2018, I believe.
Really? Get this.
Talk about your weirdly specific sports stat. Jackson Churio, over 3 consecutive games, has 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 6 extra base hits, 12 RBIs, and a stolen base. And it says here, becoming only the 4th player in baseball history to compile those numbers in 3 straight games, joining Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, wow.
If that's not the most weirdly specific stat, I mean, hey, I'm right up there with Babe Ruth. Well, yeah, if we find, you know, ways to really play with the statistics, you're right up there with the Babe and Lou Gehrig.
I'm right up there with Babe Ruth for most hot dogs eating in a single sitting while wearing a silk shirt and smoking a cigar.
So, you know, what we're talking about next week here, Dan, will be the NBA playoffs. The regular season ends on Sunday. First will be that ridiculous play-in tournament where, I mean, basically a 10 seed could become like an 8 or a 7 seed. And I'm still not a fan of that. I mean, you're letting 20 teams into the postseason. Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. The Bucks will almost certainly end up as a 5 seed, which means they'll probably be playing the Indiana Pacers, a team that they have not had great success against. But I suppose we wipe the slate clean when you start the postseason.
Yep.
How's that for a sports cliche?
The Lakers are the hottest team in the NBA probably right now.
The Lakers went back to Dallas since Dallas did perhaps the dumbest trade ever in sending Luka Doncic to the Lakers. And of course, Luka had this amazing performance in his old hometown. And I just don't know how that general manager or whoever made the decision in Dallas. I mean, that would be, well, I mean, you can use your own analogy, but to trade away the most beloved player in your city makes absolutely no sense. But it's why I don't even know how excited I can get about the NBA postseason, because the Lakers are completely unstoppable at this point.
Yeah, they're stacked. They, you know, built. And LeBron's been part of that in other teams where they build a super team.
Yep.
You know, for 1 to 2 years, and then he flees.
Mm-hmm.
He did it at Cleveland. Did it at the Heat. Trying to do it at the Lakers. So. You know, it's part of that NBA game, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely part of it. So, all right. Well, hey, thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Take care up there in Ashland. We'll talk again real soon.
Yeah, have a wonderful weekend.
All right. Mr. Bach is back with Jane Matt and Air 2 short hours from now for Matt and Air on Air. Next week on Monday, we will be talking with somebody from an economic think tank about the impact of tariffs on Wisconsin farmers. And we will be talking about the impact on Wisconsin investors with Sean O'Malley on Tuesday, all here on Up North News Radio, back in Chippewa Falls next week. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great weekend. See you Monday morning, Up North.
The national news cycle never stops.
but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.